Welcome back to the Behind the Play podcast. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined for the third time by the radio voice of the Ottawa Senators, someone that I love to chat around the rink all the time in Ottawa, the one and only Dean Brown. How are things, Dino? What's it been like the past little while after the Sens, were eliminated for you?
Well, just kind of a calm start to the summer, just doing some family stuff and yard work and running around. And, Sue does so much while the season's on. So in the summertime, I try to take some of the everyday stuff off her plate and help out in those ways. So nothing major, nothing huge going on. Scheduled next month, July 22nd, I think, to have surgery. I've had an abdominal hernia from a surgery that I had many years ago. And so finally get a chance to get that taken care of in July. So that'll be, well, the surgery won't be fun, but it'll be good to get it taken care of. Yeah, so that'll basically take care of August because it's about a month where you can't do anything. So that'll kind of take care of the summer. So yard work, family stuff, and surgical recovery will be my off season.
Are you gonna go on LTIR, or it's a are you gonna be ready for training camp,
Oh,
or
I think I'm well, I
what's
should be ready for training camp. They say it takes for the first month after you have the surgery, like I don't know what the medical term is, but it's called an incision hernia because I already had surgery years ago for a ruptured appendix, and they had to go in through my stomach. And so that actually is what herniated. So it's not a standard hernia at the, so basically they say that you can't, for a month after the surgery, you can't lift anything more than 3 pounds. So, that's three cell phones, or I'm exaggerating, but you can't really do much for the first month. So, and it's like, it's your stomach. It's not the lower normal hernia thing. And the weird thing that I, and this has nothing to do with hockey, but the weird thing was, I'm not all that new. I'm 63 years old. And when we went to see the surgeon, I said, like this incision has become a hernia. I said, I've never heard of that before. And he said, oh, well, about half the time when people have abdominal surgery like you have, half the time it herniates. I said, half the time? And I've never heard of this. He said, yeah, about half the time. So it's something that I had never heard of before, but apparently it happens a lot.
Good to
Anyway, so
know.
anyway.
Good to know. Well, speaking of pain, I know you love your job, and something that I always think of, and I think maybe I've said this on the pod before when you've come on, but like every time I say, "How's it going, Dino?" You're like, "Never been better." Like, this is like the dream job, of course, but at the same time, it is more fun to be around the rink when the team is winning. And yesterday at the Sens event, where they invited the season ticket members to, some festivities, you spoke about how just invigorating it was for you to be part of the run last year, even though it was obviously only to the first round, but just the team finally making the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. What was last season like for you, and maybe kind of expand about on that?
Well, the doing my job is the same. Doing the job is doing the job. You're right in that when the team is winning, it becomes a bit easier, mostly because it doesn't change how you broadcast the game. But players, by and large, are very competitive people. And so when they're not winning, they're not happy. And when they're not happy, they're not fun to be around. So, your work environment is just better if the team is winning because the people that you see every day and spend all your time with, players, coaches, managers, they're happier people. So, that just makes things easier and lighter. But number two, Ottawa had missed the playoffs for 7 straight years. So you do miss the excitement that that creates in your city. Again, it doesn't change the way I do my job. It doesn't make it easier or better or harder or trickier. It doesn't do anything as far as the mechanics of doing my job. But, I live here. My kids don't know it. They've never lived anywhere else. Well, my friends are here. So when the city comes alive, that kind of creates a feeling. And it just becomes, this city becomes electric when it's playoff time. And when that came back, to me anyway, it came back in a huge way. And I said last night at the season ticket thing, and I wasn't joking in that, the sounds in that building and the electricity in that building, even though it was only the first round, like I've been fortunate enough to do Stanley Cup final in 07 and getting to conference finals before, and I don't remember the building ever being louder than it was against the Leafs. And I don't remember the excitement being higher than it was. And that includes the 07 run to the final. Once again, playoff hockey really captured this city. And so for me, as someone who lives here, and I'm an Ottawa guy, that kind of stuff, whether you're in the game or just around the city, I just find that it can't help but get you jacked up because everybody is talking about it. Everybody is in it. It's all, even if you're not a hockey fan, people are wired up about it because the city's wired up. So, like I said, it doesn't change my job and it doesn't change how I do my job. But for me, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, it can't help but affect you because everybody around you is excited and it is exciting. It's a really invigorating thing. And it was so good to see this city re-energized again. And the way we knew it, I think we got complacent a little bit. What was it, 11 straight years of making the playoffs? So there was always this expectation that Ottawa was going to make the playoffs. And then when you don't for a long stretch, when it came back with a storm. And so I, like many people, really enjoyed that part of it.
Just speaking about that, like there was a long, for years, and even, when they made it to the playoffs in 2017, attendance was sparse at times. For you, like, does the run last year, the excitement help kind of maybe dissuade people that Ottawa isn't really a hockey town? Like, I feel like that was the narrative I always heard for years. And obviously, the team wasn't good, which doesn't help. And, you can talk about where the arena is situated, but do you think it, like, Ottawa as a hockey town might be kind of, livened up, but also is maybe putting more respect on its name after last year as well?
I don't know. I think the whole narrative that Ottawa isn't a hockey town was some kind of a social media thread going through some people because just factually it's hard to demonstrate that. Name me another city in Canada, and we won't talk about the United, we'll just talk about Canada, where you have on an ongoing basis one NHL team, two junior A teams. You also have several one level down junior teams that all draw, and a women's professional team that sells out on a regular basis, and you call it not a hockey town? The draw to hockey in this area is undeniable, and internet trolling about whether people love hockey here or not is, to me, just a false narrative, and I've just never believed it. I think things happened in this town with this franchise that made people rethink how they spent their hockey dollars. There was certainly it's undeniable that some people voted for Eugene Melnyk's ownership with their wallets. The people who were displeased with how he owned and how he operated the team, many of them voted with their wallets for sure. And now, with the increased attendance, with the increase in the season ticket base here, you can also say the opposite. It's pretty clear that the hockey community in Ottawa is voting with their wallets again, except they're voting for Michael Andlauer and what he's doing. So, that vote is a constant thing that you can measure and gauge. But the swing here is undeniable. And did it swing the other way in the past? Yeah, for sure. The numbers don't lie. And that was then, and now this is this. So I think it's only going to get more. I said that last night. This is only going to be more, and I think that goes not just for the hockey, but for attendance, for the business side of it, for sponsorships. For, I have friends who have a 100 level suite, and they're in the process of going through all the renewals for their suite for next year, and they were told that. We want you to come back and we want to re-sign you, but if you don't, we understand and it's not going to be a problem because they have a waiting list. Now, that doesn't come from the team, but that comes from a friend of mine who owns the suite, and he knows if he doesn't renew, it's not going to be vacant next year. They are now in a situation where they have waiting lists for some suites. And I realize the 100 levels go faster than the other levels, but they're in a good position there. And Cyril Leder made it clear last night. Their season tickets went up by 1,000 because of the playoff run this year, because people to get extra tickets had to be season ticket holders. So that was a great draw. But I don't know what their number is. But as he said last night, they're not close to the league average yet, and they're not at that. So there's still goals to be achieved for the team. But the swing is definitely going the right way for the franchise. There's no question about that.
Gord Wilson, your partner in crime
Never heard of him.
yesterday, spoke about how good this team is gonna be in the next little while. I guess it, like, from your vantage point, like, How close is this team? Like we're watching the Stanley Cup Finals. Like that to get to that level feels really far away. But how close do you think this team is to being maybe a perennial like playoff team? Like, do you see them as that in the future? Do you think that they could even be maybe a contender in a couple of years from now? Like, what do you see maybe the future outlook of this team?
Yes and yes, there are no guarantees. That never happens. There's no guarantees. Tampa won the Stanley Cup and then missed the playoffs. That kind of stuff can happen. But the way this team now is structured, and with the players that are in the core of this team are now, most of them are approaching their core years. Brady Tkachuk's an old man on this team, and he's 25. And at 25 is when most skaters in the league start to enter their core years. The 25 to 30. That's for most of them. So, you've got your best players now getting close to their prime years all at the same time, and you're starting to add. So, for me, this team, thinking that they might make the playoffs year after year after year from here on for who knows how long, is not a stretch for me. I can see that
Yeah.
being an entirely real thing. When they can contend, that could be a couple of years. That literally could be a couple of years, because of the teams that are in the playoffs, and you look at the way Florida plays, which is distinctly different from most other teams. They're fast, they're aggressive, they're physical, and they're dirty. And I don't say that in a bad way. Like, they're dirty in a
Yeah.
good way. It gives them an advantage. If the league isn't going to call things, then you got to take advantage of that. Of the young up and coming teams in the league who you look at, who are going to be the next generation of dominant teams in the league, the Ottawas, the Detroits, the Buffaloes, who look on paper like they should be the next group, the New Jerseys. Ottawa has a core that I think is most adapted to be able to play a Florida-ish style of play. We all know that that would be Brady's style. That, like, I think we saw the tip of the iceberg with Brady in the series against Toronto, and had he been healthy in that series, I think we would have seen more of that. I'm not sure he was physically capable of playing that
No.
way, but you see him every day. I see him every day.
Yeah.
We talk to him all the time. You know what Brady's like. I know what Brady's like. He would be very similar to, the way that everybody in Florida plays, which is a mean-spirited, dirty game with tenacity and with skill and, all those other things. And so I think with Ottawa, they have the ability to be able to leap ahead quickly, depending on the additions, because I think their growth is going to be less dependent on additions to the team and more dependent on the maturity of the players they have. As Dave Poulin was saying last night, you go through some teams and you look at, this guy, 11 years of experience in the playoffs, this guy, 12 years, well, Ottawa, all these guys, 13 of these guys next year, you'll be able to say they have a playoff series under their belt. One, that's all. So, I think experience is going to be the great growth monitor for this team, for the very best players on this team. And clearly, who they put around those players is hugely important. But I think that probably the best meter of how this team is going to progress is still going to be dependent on how the core progresses. That is going to be the measure of how close they are to being a team that can win something.
Is that like, when I look at this team, I think, you talk about Brady Tkachuk, I think you kind of know who that player is gonna be. Like I still think he can probably take strides in his game, maybe be a bit more of a proficient goal scorer, better playmaker, but I think he is who he is. But you look at Jake Sanderson, Dave Poulin spoke just glowingly about him last night. I feel like we've been on that Jake Sanderson bandwagon for, a long time. But him and Timmy look like the two guys that I don't know what their ceilings are. Like, can Jake Sanderson be a Norris Trophy guy? Can Tim Stützle be a perennial 100-point guy? Like, I think that's in, the cards. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but do you feel like that's almost the biggest maybe sway to that taking that next step as much as it is like, hey, we need to bring in a top four defenseman, top six forward?
Yeah, for sure. And that goes to what I was just saying. When two dominant players like Sanderson and Stützle take advancements in their career, that can't help but advance this team, because there's such key guys in both. There's no forward that plays more than Tim Stützle, and there's no player on the team that plays more than Jake Sanderson. And I saw the balloting that just came out today. Cale Makar, wins the Norris Trophy, but you see the balloting, and I think Sanderson was sixth, I think, in the balloting. I think
Oh, I think it was 10th,
10th,
but I could be
something.
wrong. He
Anyway,
was he
something
was
like
in
that.
it, yeah. Yeah.
That's this year when people, I think, around the league were just starting to figure out what he is and where he is. And I can see next year him being a top five defenseman in the league. I'm
Yeah.
not sure you're ready to say that he's better than Werenski or better than Cale Makar or, better than what's his
Quinn
face out in
Hughes.
Vancouver.
Quinn
But
Hughes.
yeah, Quinn Hughes. But I look at the guys that are on the list this year that got votes, and there's several that are above him in the balloting than in actual play. I would put him above right now. And I think next year, I think more around the league will realize who and what he is. And I personally think right now he's a top five defenseman in this league. Obviously, a lot of the voters don't yet, but I think that will become something that happens next year. So if you're in the top five, you are a Norris candidate. You're somebody that is, viewed in the balloting as somebody who's in the top five. And if you're in the top five, you are a legitimate candidate for the Norris Trophy. And I think that will happen next year. And with Tim Stützle, I think the biggest thing for me this year, Alex, in the playoffs was that he played the games against Toronto in the kind of physical nature I've never seen him play before. And that was, and I think is, a major step for Tim in understanding what kind of a player you have to be in addition to your skill to be a successful playoff player. And I, like it's hard not to compare, but, I look at the step that Tim Stützle made last year, and I compare that to some of the key offensive players for Toronto who've done this many times and still have not taken that step themselves. And I say to myself, in one playoff series, Tim Stützle moved ahead of those guys as far as play, maybe not overall skill, because Toronto has some unbelievably skilled players and they put up great regular season numbers. But the things you have to be able to add to your game in the playoffs, Tim Stützle added those to his game last year in the playoffs. And again, for just comparison, there's probably three important players in Toronto that I would put on that list of guys who have repeatedly not been able to take that step. Thus, their team has not been able to take that step,
Yeah, no, like I mean, we don't need to relitigate the first round, but my colleague at Sportsnet, Justin Bourne, had a really interesting story about like the idea of like the dog in him, right? Like that kind of fierce competitor. And like you're around Timmy, like that guy is as competitive as you can get. And I think
At
like you're
anything,
watching, at
at
anything.
anything.
And you watch the finals, you look at Florida, you look at McDavid. Obviously, everyone remembers the video of him in the locker room. Like, I'm not saying Timmy's, yelling at his teammates all the time, but he is a competitive guy. And you match that with the skill. He got a lot of grief for taking all the hits. I never felt like any of those hits in the playoffs were like him chasing a hit just because he was just finishing checks, right? And that's part of playoff hockey. And it wore down the Leafs and the Sens, if Pacioretty doesn't score that goal, win in overtime, I think they win that series, right? So I'm completely in agreement with you, and just the level that Tim Stützle took. I'd love him to shoot more. I wish I've asked him about that a bunch, but I still think he's what, 23? Like he's
I know it seems like he's been in the league a long time, but he's still not close to his prime years.
no.
Another 2 or 3 years, he'll be into his prime. Well, what could Tim Stützle be in another 2 or 3 years? Like seriously, he's he his growth has reminded me very similarly of David Pastrnak in Boston, because Pastrnak was saying not the same kind of player when he came into the league that he is now. And that's not an uncommon thing, but for those high skill guys, which Tim is, sometimes it's a different path, and it's rarely linear. It's a constant stream up. Like there's up and then down and then down and then up and then up and then, so it's rarely a linear all forward steps, no backward steps. So you see that with Tim, and I think for fans who watch this game a lot, I think they've seen those incremental changes in him. And I think those are important ones. And so when he does get into his prime, I think he's going to have a lot of things worked out in his game that are going to make him an awesome player. And again, you look at this is very much a copycat league, and it's not just in team and style and choice of play and system and everything like that. It's players watching what successful players do. And if you're a player and you watch the Stanley Cup final just a little bit, you can't help but take from watching Florida and Edmonton play. And if you take the Florida Panthers, to the final 3 years in a row, and they could end up being back-to-back champions, what's the common thread? The common thread is that every player for Florida plays an aggressive style that is always on the edge and is dirty, and but they get away with it, and that's a competitive advantage. I can't believe more teams don't do it. But like if you're a high skill guy like Tim, are you not watching Bennett? Are you not watching Verhaeghe? Are you not watching like you start running through, you're not watching Kachuk. You're not,
Marchand.
you're looking through their most skilled, their best players, and go, oh, they're not only fast and high skilled and play a tempo game and hit, but they're also kind of dirty and they're hard on their sticks and they play a game, all of them do, with kind of a growl to their game. How do you not notice that? You have to notice that, and Ed, I think other than the last game, I think Edmonton has done a job that I didn't think they could in the first two games of the series, where they matched a lot of that. Because clearly they realize that, you have to be able to match that. And it can't just be, and Florida has proven this, it can't just be a couple of your players or a couple of guys in your third and fourth lines. For it to be effective, all of your players have to play that way. And Florida's, to me anyway, Florida's great strength is they all play that way all the time. And that's why they are, amongst many reasons, but to me, that primarily is the reason they're so hard to play against. You get no relief from that style of play, no matter what line you face.
I'm curious with that, talking about just the way the team played, because I felt like for the most part, this Senators team this year was quite consistent in their effort, right? You sometimes have it a long road trip or,
It's 82 games, you're right.
but they weren't blown out a lot. They were always in games. Like obviously they would have wanted to win a couple more, probably score a couple more goals, of course, who wouldn't? But I felt they played the right way most of the time. And it felt like in the past, like you've covered this team and this core for a long time, they were very riding the wave and very inconsistent. And that doesn't lead to, of course, winning hockey. How much do you think this year, obviously, they make the jump into the playoffs, but also the way they did it and how they played, right? They weren't just like run and gunning teams and I remember New Jersey a couple of years, they just score on everyone, but in the playoffs, it was a bit harder for them. Do you feel like with this young core, as you mentioned, everyone basically had their first, taste of playoff experience, that just by inertia, next year this team should be better? And as you said, sometimes you take a step forward and a couple steps back, but do you feel like that's where we're kind of going with this group?
I do, and I give Travis Green a whole lot of credit for that, because what he has established here, he kind of picked up what Jacques Martin was laying down and then added to it. And I think probably one of the biggest things as far as that consistency goes is that Travis was unrelenting with the players about what his minimum standard was, or as he called them, his non-negotiables. And you can only do that with a team and have it work if the players truly know that it isn't negotiable. And I think one of the things that Travis did the beginning of the season and later in the season, it wasn't looked on punishment, but it was a byproduct of performance, where lines, for example, they were dependent upon performance. And so you saw many times on this team, guys that were thought of by the media, by fans, as top six players on, on the forward, in the forward ranks. And there'd be games where you'd see a guy playing third line right wing, or go from the, we saw several times where guys are going from the third, from the first line to the fourth line and vice versa. If your production's not there, he's going to try something different. And it's nothing personal, and he's not punishing you. But if your game just isn't there right now, that happens in an 82 game schedule. But the team's not going to wait for you to get back to what you need to do. There's going to be changes. And I think when players got that mindset that you have to perform to maintain your position, that let the whole idea of, there he's in the doghouse. It wasn't in the doghouse. It's not punishment. It's if you're performing and it's working, we're going to keep doing it. If it's not, we're not going to keep doing it. And that goes for everybody. Like the end, near the end of the season there, Claude Giroux was having some production problems. Well, he's on the third line now. And some people are losing their minds. How can you put Claude? Well, it's nothing against Claude. Just right now, he doesn't happen to be on top of his game. So put him in a spot, and that's the way it should be. So if you're trying to get your players to understand that the stuff you're saying in the meetings is true, you have to do it in real life in games. And I give Travis credit for that, because it's very easy to say, I don't want to piss off my best players. It's It's easy to say that. That's a safe thing for a coach to do. Let's be honest. Coaches get fired all the time. Look what just happened in Dallas. You think exit meetings with the players didn't have something to do with Peter DeBoer being fired in Dallas after going to the conference final 3 years in a row? Players have a say in who coaches the team. So it's not a particularly safe thing that Travis did, I think, but I give him a lot of credit before because it was the right thing. And he got the right answers because his team was more consistent. And to me, the most important thing was, is that, when on my coach of the year ballot, I had Travis down as my third selection. And so of the third of the votes he got, one of them was mine. And I was transparent about it. And I said to people, I said, I realize people will say, well, that's just homerism. You call the games. I don't work for the Senators. I work for the radio station. But you're there with them all the time, and you talk to the coach, and like it's homerism. I said, no, it really isn't. And if it is, I don't think I am. But if it isn't, because for me, the biggest single thing above what we just talked about, but the biggest single thing for me and why I voted for Travis is that every single team, when they're keeping their coach or when they're looking for a new coach, always says the same thing. We need to keep our coach because he's taught our team how to defend. And you can't go anywhere in this league unless you can defend. When a team is looking for a coach, we got to get a coach in there who can get these guys to defend and really perfect our system and take it to the next level. But that being able to defend. So not last season, but the season before, the Ottawa Senators were tied with Philadelphia for the worst team save percentage in the NHL. The worst team save percentage in the NHL. In one season behind the bench, Travis Green took them from last in the league, tied for last in the league, to they finished, I think, eighth or ninth, somewhere in there,
Yeah,
but
it
top
was
10.
around
But
there, yeah.
for most of the last third of the season, they were either fifth or sixth in the league. So if you're in the top 10, you're one of the elite defensive teams in the league. So my question when I was asked about this, my question is, will you tell me what other first-year coach in the league or any coach in the league has taken his team from last to elite in 1 year, and I'll vote for them instead? And no one had an answer for me. And I talked to a couple of other guys who do what I do, and because when I'm making my choices, I have a list of five guys that I call and pick their brains, who are way smarter than me. Two of them are coaches in the league. One of them's a former coach in the league. One of them's an assistant coach in the league, and one's a former GM. And I just kind of pick their brains about their thoughts, and I pose the same thing. And none of my guys had an answer other than Travis Green. And so for me, that's why I put Travis on my coach of the year ballot. And I don't apologize. And did Marty in Montreal do a great job? Yeah, sure he
Yeah,
did. Did
sure.
Monty do a good job? Absolutely. But for me, my criteria had to do with what does every team publicly say they're looking for every year? Well, he fulfilled that and in spades with his team. So on my ballot, I wanted to reflect that. Same as with my number one, who ended up being Spencer Carberry, who won it. I said, what was the expectation here? And what are they better at? Washington became an unbelievably good defensive team and added offense and a bunch of other things. But for me, I don't apologize for picking Travis Green at all. And the two things
No.
we've just talked about are the two biggest reasons.
I think I wrote about this a lot this year, and I'm sure you guys talked about it a lot on the radio, but the evolution defensively for guys like Tim Stützle, Brady Tkachuk, Drake Batherson, even Thomas Chabot too, like that is coaching because it's not like there's what last year they're 22, this year they're 23. It's defense, right? Like it's not that shouldn't be, oh, I got way better at skating strides, so now I'm better defensively. Maybe a little bit, but not really, right? And I think Travis Green deserves a huge world of credit for just transforming this team into playing the right way, to being consistent, to be much more level-headed, right? With a core that was essentially the same, obviously. They brought in some veterans, which I think definitely helped. And a lot of the players spoke about the impact of Cousins and Jensen and Perron and all those guys. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think Travis Green deserves probably the lion's share of, the credit for how good. Like Tim Stützle, I thought defensively, I don't know what you think, Dean. I thought he became so good
The
defensively.
best he's ever been.
Oh, and not even close.
He's
And
never going to win the Selke Trophy. He's never going to be Barkov. But compared to what Tim has been defensively in the past, Miles, like, just completely different in that regard. Totally different.
Yeah, and like you look even at like McDavid and Draisaitl, like this is the best year they've ever been defensively, and you know they could still win the cup, and obviously they got better. You know, like you have to. I thought Brady had his moments where I don't think he's ever going to be a defensive stopper, but how many times in late in games did he make a great poke check or block a shot kind of at the right moment in the right spot? And I was like, I've never seen Brady Tkachuk ever do that. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the players react to him next season, because it's, you know, okay, you've taken the jump, you have these habits, and now it's like, oh, you can kind of get a bit laissez-faire, and you know, maybe it's the voice kind of tunes out if he is, you know, a bit of a harder guy to be around, or just like harder on the players. I mean, so I think that's going to be interesting, but I totally agree. I would definitely have had green on my ballot if I were to have one.
And you know, I think one of the other things too, you know, what you just mentioned is if you look around the league, if you want to be a successful player on a team that's successful, i.e., playoff success, you have to be a two-way player. The days of a guy just being a shooter, you know, is there anybody left in the league other than Ovechkin that is literally
No.
just I'm not going to say totally a one-dimensional player, but you know, let's face it, Ovechkin's really
Obvious.
only a dominant player when he's shooting. You know, he's 40 years old. He can't skate anymore. And I don't say that as a demeaning thing. I think it talks to what an amazing player he is that he can't get around the ice anymore, anywhere close to the way he used to be able to. But yet he can still score, even when people know exactly where he's going to be shooting from, and they still can't stop him. You know, it's an amazing thing. He can't really move out there, but even with that, like they know where he's going to be standing and they still can't stop him. It's an amazing thing to watch. But if you look around the league, you just mentioned, you know, McDavid. You know, if you look around the league, the very best players in the league know if you're not a two-way player, you're not going to be a guy that leads your team to anything. It's just that's not the way the game works anymore.
No, like I mean, look at the Four Nations, right? Like those two games, like it's the best players in the world, and you're like, this is the most highly competitive, tight checking, defensive hot. Like it was beautiful to watch, but it wasn't like, oh, just grade A chance after grade A chance, because you just have guys, you know, Connor McDavid circling around and grabbing Chris Kreider, stealing the puck, and then Jack Hughes comes, you know, like it was. And I think that's such a testament to where the game's kind of evolved, where you can't just, unless you're Ovechkin, which is, you know, credit to him, best goal scorer of all time. But it's interesting. I guess, like, speaking about the team, and you talked about Giroux a bit earlier, what do you think happens there with him, and what do you think the right decision is for maybe both the team and for the player?
Well, I think eventually it's going to get done, and mostly because Claude wants to be here and the team wants him to be here. So now you just have to work out how much and for how long. And I hope and I think that they'll get to that at some point, because I think both want each other. But it has to be something that's, you know, right for the team, because they've got to move ahead and pay some other guys. And Claude is not on the front of his career; he's on the back of it. And I'm sure he understands he's not going to make the same amount of money, and he's not going to get a long-term contract at his age. But you know, and the other side of the coin is the team has to be respectful of, you know, what he's done in his career, what he's achieved, what he's done here in Ottawa, how he's helped the young players, and you know, try and develop something, some kind of a contract that respects both those things. And when they get to that, it'll be over, but I don't know what that number is going to be. I don't know what how many years. Like I don't know. I just kind of look at it and say, you know, if the team wants him and he wants to be on the team, there should be a way to find a path forward. So sometimes these things aren't easy or quick, but I like to be optimistic and think it's going to get done.
Speaking of another, a contract that did get done. What do you think about the Cleven deal? Because he was so outstanding in the playoffs, as you know, just took a such a huge leap. But it was very much a bridge deal, just 2 years, a bit of, you know, 1. I think 6 million or in that
1-6.
range. So, do you think, like, if you like a part of me, I would have liked them to maybe go longer term and given him a bit more money, because I just thought I saw enough from him. But what do you see as kind of like, where do you think he needs to maybe progress to maybe get another, you know, maybe bigger payday, and how do you see him kind of evolving as a player?
Well, just in general, not Clevin oriented, but just in general, if you want to make more money, you got to get more points. I mean, that's the number one, that's the number one thing in this league. Point generation creates income. So, and being a third pairing guy who's a defensive defenseman who oftentimes is out there in a shutdown role, you're not put in a lot of offensive situations. So when you get in them, you got to try and take advantage if you want to make more money. But I think that he's always going to be a guy who is obviously a huge physical guy. And I think what we're going to see is that physical side of his game come out now a lot more because he's gotten used to being in the league and he's not paranoid about getting himself out of position to make a physical play. And I think he's settled into his game. But again, even with him, he could take it a little bit of a step back next year because he's really, it's his first full year in the NHL. And having a bit of a quote unquote sophomore jinx is not a new thing. But I like the deal for both. Player and for the team. It gives them a top six defenseman at a reasonable price for 2 years, something they can lock in and count on. And he's proven that he can play that role. And for him, it kind of lets him get his feet underneath him and generate some numbers so that his next deal might be a longer one for a lot more money if he can prove that he could be a top four defenseman. So it gives both of them the opportunity. And I didn't speak to him myself, but I saw some of the clips and things he said. For himself personally, he wanted to get something done early so that he wasn't thinking about it, wasn't bothering him, and he was fine. Would he have liked to make more money? Yeah, sure. I'm sure he did.
Of course.
Everybody does, but was happy with what he got and knows it's only for 2 years, and then see where he is and what that's worth in the marketplace. Because he'll be free again. I'm thinking I'm not sure. I'd have to check, but I believe he's still going to be an RFA when he
I
comes out of
believe
this.
so.
So he's still going to be under team control, but he's going to be in a situation where the marketplace with the cap going up is probably going to be a lot higher than it would have been a couple of years ago, going through a 2 year bridge. So just there's going to be more money available in general in the league. And so, he'll be in a better position to try and get a chunk of it for himself. But I thought he had a great second half to the season, like a lot of players. I think in the first half of the season, he struggled at times. He knew it, they knew it, but they lived through it and he was fine. And I think he got the benefit of the fact that they just didn't have very much depth on the left side. So that allowed him the free time to be able to work things out in his game because, in other situations for a team that's trying to make the playoffs, I'm not sure you'd wait that long for a guy to get his game in shape. But like I said, they didn't have a lot of options on that left side, and that was the benefit to him.
And he is an RFA at the end. I just
There you
checked
go.
it. I'm curious, like, with how would you maybe assess Steve Staios's first almost 2 years in charge, because he's got the team to the playoffs. I think you can't say he's hasn't been somewhat successful. Of course he has, but what have you just made of what he's brought to Ottawa, the culture change, just everything so far?
Well, like you said, you can't say it hasn't been successful because the product on the ice has been successful. So, that's what they all get judged by. They all get judged by production, and the production has been there. And, after the game when they clinched, we were on the road and they didn't clinch by winning. It was a bizarre plane ride home because the team had lost, but they had clinched a playoff spot. And when I got on the plane, Steve sits in the first seat right up front, as every general manager does. And when I got on the plane, I went to shake his hand, because they just clinched a playoff spot. And he said to me, he said, it's a big step, but it's just a first step. And I told him, I said, Steve, I said, congratulations, but with all due respect, it's a massive step because it's like running the hurdles in track. You can only perfect your stride and do well in the last half of the race if you get over the first hurdle. So the first hurdle in a hurdles race is a massive hurdle. Even though it's exactly the same height as all the other hurdles, the importance of being able to get over that first hurdle is what allows you to get to the next hurdles. And so, getting a playoff spot for this team at this time was a massive thing. And like, and I said, and I said the same thing to Travis. I said, you should be very proud. This is a massive step forward. And I understand there's many more steps required and there's many more steps to come and there's much more work to do. And I get all that. And it's true. It's absolutely true. But that was a massive step. And you cannot extricate Steve Staios and Dave Poulin and the entire hockey operations department from the success of the team because they say, well, it's the players and the coach. Well, who picked the coach? And who's the guy who changed the mix of the players who were competing to do that? Who did well? That's hockey operations. That's Steve Staios. So if you're evaluating his first 2 years, how do you not evaluate it to be a resounding success? Now, everybody might not like every move, and everybody might not
Sure.
understand every move, and some people might go, pick whatever their pet peeve is. They might say, yeah, but you know what? Perron's contract is too long for too much money, or like whatever is the thing
Whatever, yeah.
that pisses you off, you know? Can you scratch at all those little scabs? Sure, everybody could on every team in the league, for sure.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at was the team successful? The answer is yes. You cannot extricate Steve's performance in his job from the reason the team had success, because he was every single decision on every player and the coaching staff ran through him and hockey ops. So there was no part of it that he didn't touch. So I don't get the conversation. Can you really give Steos credit for that? How do you not? Like
No,
I don't understand
I
how you
agree.
cannot do it. So I guess it's one of those conversations, especially here in Canada, that we all like to have, because on shows we all like to pretend we're the general manager or we're the coach, or we all
It'd be
love to do
fun.
that, because it's a
It's
great
fun.
hobby. We don't have the pressure, or and I after 34 years of doing hockey or whatever I'm at, I know a couple of things for sure. One of them is I'm not smart enough to do any job, scouting, coaching, managing. I could probably work in the cafeteria, but that's about it. But there is a way to gauge success, and in this case, it is very easy to gauge and say that Steve Staios and hockey operations have clearly done a very good job, whether you like every step they've taken to do it or not. But the success, we're all creatures of habit, and if you're asking me, do I personally like the fact that I used to be able to walk anywhere I want, go anywhere, and now with Steve Staios there, he's put up barriers and don't want people here and don't want media there. That's a player-only area, and there's borders that have been put up wherever you go now, and some people get their nose out of joint. I'm not saying that I'm not going. So what? I can't walk down that hallway now? It's not my place to judge whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. It's his shop to run how he wants, and you can't argue with success. So all the little griping about stuff like that, in the big scheme of things, who cares? Like, who cares? It's all minor stuff. But that's part of the environment that he's created, and part of what he's talked about creating that dynamic within their team that they control and they set the standards for. And that is all part of that. And so people on the outside disagreeing whether something is necessary or not necessary, or trivial or not trivial, or smart or dumb, or it's irrelevant. At the end of the day, it's about this league is about winning and success. And they won and they had success. So, like, keep doing what you're doing, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
I also think the moniker that the fans give him, a steady Steve Staios, obviously, he is a very calm guy. You don't feel like he's going up and down, but I think his demeanor and talking about the process and sometimes it is lip service. I don't think, I think there's some of that, but as you know, and you know much better than me, this organization's been dysfunctional for a long time, and now it's, I mean, it's not perfect, but I think there's a much more calm tranquility within the organization. And I think Michael Andlauer deserves a lot of credit too. But I think that's what that team needed as well, right? Like last year or 2 seasons ago in the 23-24 season, they rode the wave. Same in 22-23, always those bad starts, right? Where they'd get down on themselves and they couldn't really kind of be resilient, and they, run the negativity into the ground. And I think his demeanor of saying, "Okay, let's just take it one step at a time." Same with Travis Green. And again, sometimes it is just to say the right things, but I do think some of that is definitely genuine, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. I guess, Michael Andlauer made a lot of news recently, and I'm not going to go into that, but I'm just curious. Like, he is quite outspoken. He is also investing in the team much more than the previous owner. What do you think of an outspoken owner just as a whole? Like, I find it an interesting little nugget. And in the NBA, they talk about the new owner syndrome, where you get the net shiny new toy and you want to kind of add everything to it. At the end of the day, I think Andlauer has been really good for the team. I'm not trying to completely diminish him at all, but what have you just thought of his first, 2 years in charge as well?
Well, it's entertaining for everybody, you know, when you're saying stuff that's not cliches, it's entertaining. There's no question about that. Connecting that question with the last one about Steos, the steady Steve thing, that's the way Steve is. That's the kind of person he is. But, you know, it's kind of like what Mike Tyson you say about fighting. You know, everybody's got a plan until you get hit in the face. Well, you can have Steve Steos be steady Steve all you want. You have to have an owner that allows that. If the owner's leaning on the guy, say, hey, we got to make a move now because you know, so you're in a situation now where the owner wants you to speed things up, but you're steady Steve. Steady Steve can only be steady Steve if there's an owner that allows him to be steady Steve. So, you know, and that is the commitment that you need to have from your owner to not just stand at press conferences and say, you know, the general manager is the general manager. He makes all the hockey decisions, and then I hold him responsible for what happens after that, and I don't have anything to do with it. Well, it's easy to say that at a press conference, but there's lots of owners that are talking to their general manager every day saying, why are we like move this guy out? He was crappy. Like it. So again, it's easy to say those things until you get into the heat of it. And I think the biggest thing in their relationship, at least what we've seen publicly, is that Michael Andlauer has been true to his word that he is letting Steve do what he thinks he's needed to do, and however long Steve thinks that should be to do it properly and with enough forethought and with a plan. And you don't always get that kind of time from owners. So that's my point about Steve can only be steady Steve if he's got an owner that allows that. Number one. Number two, as far as the owner in the last 2 years, there's so many tentacles that he has sent out in so many different directions that have created this web of inclusivity that wasn't always seen here before. In that, I think Andlauer is exceptional at getting feedback from a lot of different groups, and while he's getting it, he's not behaving in a way where he's just listening to you, but he's thinking about the next guy he's going to go shake hands with at the cocktail party. Like I tell people all the time, if you see Michael Andlauer somewhere, go and shake his hand and start a conversation because he wants to hear what you have to say. He wants to hear your opinion. He wants to meet you. He wants to know you. And it's not just lip service. I've seen him in so many social situations and at fundraising things, and people walk away going, yeah, I was talking to him about parking, and like he's asking me questions about, you know, like, and that's the way he is. And I know it seems like such a simple thing, but when you're connecting with people, and it isn't just millionaires who are invested in your team or billionaires, and it isn't just season seat holders, it's the guy who goes to two games a year. It's the guy who can't afford to go to any games a year, but watches on TV or listens on the radio to every game. Like he is engaged with whomever he talks to. And that's one of his great superpowers, is that the way he includes everybody in the process of run, and everybody understands. Everybody's an adult. They understand at the end of the day, the decisions he makes are going to be based on what he thinks are the best thing for the business. And for him, it's a business, not because I told him this lot doesn't drain out as fast as that lot. You know, like everybody understands that you're an adult, but I think he does a great job of letting every single constituency, when they meet and talk to him, have a say. And he gives them the time to tell him, you know, how they really feel and why. And he takes that information in and he processes it all in a big way, which to me is amazing when you run the kind of company he runs outside of hockey and you still have the time to do that and the brain space to do all that. Like to me, that's the amazing thing. You know, running a multi-billion dollar company, which he's now sold, but part of the deal to selling it to UPS is he's still going to run it. So, you know, you're doing that. You're running a multi-billion dollar company. Oh, and you're also running a billion dollar hockey team, and you have all these balls in the air, and you still have the time to go out and connect individually with people wherever you go. He doesn't go anywhere in this city without people coming up to him. Hey, Michael Andlauer, how are you doing? You know? And so it's constant connectivity, and he still has the brain space for all of that. Like I know I couldn't do that. Like I wouldn't have the ability to do that, you know?
I always joke to friends is like I've only met one billionaire and I don't think he's like the normal. Like I don't feel
I'm the
like
same.
he's right because as you said, like being I think you've been around him a bit more than me, but I've been around him. Like he's asking you like how are your kids? How's you know how did you like the game? How did you like the
And he wants
facilities?
to
What are
know.
you? He wants to know, right? And he's. and it's not fake lip service, or it's not like, oh, okay, like next person, hey, nice to meet you, bye, right? Like he genuinely cares. And I think just be like a good dude, cares about people, isn't rude, isn't a jerk. You know, obviously he's a billionaire and we're not, you know, that comes with some a different lifestyle and everything. But I do think overall his heart's in the right place. He's a good guy from all accounts, and I think Suns fans really appreciate it. It also compared to the previous owner, and we don't need to relitigate that. But it's just interesting just being around him and seeing him, and at the same time, he's so passionate about it, right? Like he literally, what did he do? The hop and the skip at the Suns golf tournament. Yeah, you were saying.
And I was just going to say, and he doesn't apologize for it, but he is an emotional guy. And sometimes he says and does things that he goes back and apologizes for because he realized probably not appropriate. But I believe that people appreciate that because that's what all of us are like in real life. Like there's lots of times where, all of us have to say, oh, I said something, it was a dumb thing to say. I'm sorry about that, but he does that, in the times where he has said things where maybe it was a misstep or just, if he had to go back and do it again, he would do it differently. He goes back and he apologizes and move on. And I personally think people, the average person, doesn't see that as a fault. Like, well, like he's got to learn to just button it up. Well, no, be yourself, be who you are. That's who he is. But when he does make a misstep, he doesn't have any problem just saying, I apologize that, that was, I would do that differently if I was going to do it again. And I think most people appreciate that because that's the way they are in their lives. There's nobody who's perfect when they're talking to people, but because he's an owner, everything he says gets magnified and amplified all
Of
the time.
course.
And so a little tiny slip of the tongue can become a great big massive thing because he's an owner of an NHL team. So the magnitude of his little slip ups is far greater than yours or mine.
No.
But
Yeah.
I would hate to see, that natural passion and enthusiasm that Michael has
Exactly.
get muted because he's scared that he might offend somebody with something that, might not have been the best thing to say in that particular time. So he goes back and apologizes and you move on. And I think that's the way adults generally do it in life. And I would, like I said, I would hate to see him change because I think that's who he is. And I would rather have a genuine, passionate guy leading and owning the hockey team than somebody where, okay, here comes cliche 19. He's going to follow it up with cliche 12. Well, that looks like a situation where I'll use cliche 7. Like, I think we all want to see the honest, passionate, emotional guy be that way and be real. And I think most people realize he is very real.
I find that also interesting, just going back, circling back to your other point about how he just lets Steos do what he does, because he is an emotional guy. And I mean, you've been around the NHL or
Yes.
other major professional sports where you have an emotional owner, and then it's like trade that guy or do that, and at the end of the day, it's his team. He can do what he wants, right?
Oh,
And
absolutely.
so it's just an interesting almost dichotomy between who he is, where he is an emotional, heavily invested guy, but the guy leading his team is almost the opposite. I'm not saying Steos is obviously very invested in it, but he's not. He's very calm. It is more cliches with Steos. So. Which is probably a good thing to do as a GM, is to be calm, cool, collected, be much more rational, not kind of just, oh, we lost the game, we need to trade this or do that, right?
But
So
Steve,
it's just an.
not just in front of the mic though, Alex. Steve in
No.
real life, like,
Oh, he's a nice.
for
He's,
yeah,
yeah.
fortunate in my position, you get to spend some time with Steve that's not professional time. It's personal time where you're just, a couple of guys. And Steve is a guy that is very emotional in that his emotion comes through in intensity. When things aren't going well, he bears down, he grips down hard. He's not a guy that gets frazzled. But the same thing, when you're talking to him, he's measured in the things that he says because he wants to be very precise in his words because that's the way he is personally. So he is also very true to who he is when he's
Oh.
speaking, just in a different way because he and Michael in many ways are alike, and in many other ways they are not alike. That's just the normal thing with two distinctly different personalities. And if you want to look at the difference, without any audio, without them saying anything, I always love this, but when TV shows the Senators GM's box during games, because most times Michael is up there, not in the owner's suite. You know, he lets other people in the owner's suite, and they have the cocktails and stuff, and he's up with the hockey ops guys and Steve and Pooley and all the guys. And when there's, you know, when there's something happened one way or the other, you see the reaction from Steve and you see the reaction from Michael, and oftentimes they're very different reactions to the same play, but they are true to the two personalities. Michael is, you know, he's wound up, and Steve is very measured, looking at the reactions of the players, gauging what, you know, because that's who he is. And I find it a very telling thing about the two personalities, in that, you know, if it's a good thing that just happened on the ice, they're both happy and they're excited about it, but visually you see two very different reactions
Yeah,
to it,
distinct.
but they're both honest reactions about who they are as people. That's who they are. You know, it's an honest reaction to the differences in their personalities.
It's such an interesting anyways, before I let you go, I guess just to maybe staying on the maybe Ann Lauer train a little bit, there's been a lot of like there's gonna hopefully be a new arena. There's discussions about that. What I guess just like what are your thoughts about, hopefully a little bit of progress. It still seems kind of murky, but how important do you feel like it is for this city to get a downtown arena? And I guess how hopeful are you that it'll happen?
I think it's important as the city grows and changes. I think that it's important to be downtown. I think it's not terrible to be out here where they are, and if it ends up they just put more money into this building and stay here, that won't be a bad thing. It just won't be as good as it could be downtown. And that's not really a hockey thing. That's an overall usage thing for the community, because, you know, if you have a building downtown where it is, you open up all kinds of avenues for more concerts, more conventions. Really, Ottawa doesn't get nearly the kind of convention business it should, because there's no venue big enough to handle big conventions. Well, if you have a building downtown where you have all the hotels, now you can have conventions that you couldn't have before, and all the other things that come around the building other than hockey. The hockey in the building they're in right now is just fine, and but there's just so much more opportunities downtown. For me personally, you know, I'm not involved in any of the negotiations, but I've been around here long enough to watch how the NCC operates. You know, I've been here since 1984, so I remember very well over the years how the NCC operates. And there will be I believe there will be a downtown rink, but I don't know if it's going to be there, because what the NCC doesn't seem to realize is that Michael Andlauer and his partners have options. They have many options downtown. You know, that's not the only one. And number two, and maybe most importantly, my personal opinion is that the NCC needs Michael Andlauer far more than he needs them. If he wants a downtown site, there's multiple locations. Mark Sutcliffe in the city of Ottawa, the mayor, would
Is
be
pushing,
more than happy to sell him some land. And like, there's multiple opportunities to go somewhere else downtown and have a deal that gets worked out. And being at LeBreton Flats would be fantastic, but not at any price. And I just think that if the NCC thinks that they can go it alone and build a multi-use facility down there, and it becomes anything close to profitable without hockey, best of luck. Best of luck finding a building down there that you're going to use that land for, where it's going to have any kind of capacity or usage that a building would have if it's a hockey rink and a multi-use facility. So, you know, like I said, I personally think that the NCC needs the Michael Andlauer and his group far more than the other way around. But I also know that what the NCC is notorious for is being under no real timeline pressures. They feel like the end game is the most important game, and however long it takes, it takes. And that's a frustration that everybody is. I told Mr. Andlauer before this process even started, I told him, I said, "I remember when I got here in 1984, there was a story in the Ottawa Citizen about the NCC moving to build an aquarium at LeBreton Flats." And I said, nothing happened for 25 years after that, and then they built the War Museum. So I said, it seems to be a facility every quarter century, and your quarter century hasn't rolled around yet. So I said, you have to understand that is the nature of the NCC. But they're going to do what they do and how they do it. But if they think that they're dealing with a guy that doesn't have other options, I think they're making a massive mistake and just getting in the way and slowing things down for reasons that aren't particularly good reasons. But that's my own personal humble opinion.
On that note, let's go to a, maybe a more cheery note to end this. How
All right.
excited are you just for next season? And Like, does it, is this like maybe the most excited you've been in a long time for like the season to come up? And do you get, I guess a better question is like, do you get a bit restless over the summer, or are you just like, okay, I'm good. I want my summer. I want to be outside enjoying the sun.
No, I get restless every summer, no matter how long it is. It's just because it's too long. You know, like for me personally, a couple of months off is fantastic. That's lots. More than that seems like too much. But in my job, you can't go out and get another job because in September you got to go back to doing your job. So, you know, you just do hockey and that's it. As far as excitement goes, I'm excited to start every season because I have a great job. That I know how lucky I am to have it, and I'm very grateful. So I get amped up even when I know the team. When I went into the rebuild, I was still excited going into seasons because hockey's back, and you knew what was coming. This is a bit different though because you know the possibilities are greater. And you know, last night when we were talking to the season ticket holders and doing that whole thing, I said, you know, one of the things I think that really ignited this community is that they wanted more and they got more. And next year the team wants more and the fans expect more and more. Is fun. And so for me, that's kind of the perspective that I take into this one. I expect more from this team next year. They expect more from themselves. I know the fans expect more, and more is a fun ride to be on, you know? So from that perspective, yeah, I'm excited every year the season starts just because I love my job and I love going to the rink and getting paid to do it. It's a gift. You know, like if anybody said you get to do this for 40 years, I'd be going, sign me up. And so, you know, but yeah, it's a different vibe when the team has made the playoffs and they look like they can make it again and even be better and grow more, and that ignites the fans and you get more and more, and I like more, and I think we're headed for more. So yeah, that's exciting.
I'm pretty sure I just heard you say that they're winning the Stanley Cup next year. I'm pretty
Maybe
sure.
not next year.
No.
Not that's more,
Yeah, that's
but.
more and more. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? It wouldn't be shocked, you know, in 2, 3 years if they're legitimate contenders for it. That would not shock me in any way.
Me neither. If Steos and company makes the right decisions this summer, I think they're going to be in a really good spot in 2, 3 years from now to you never know if you can win a cup, but be in a position where you can say, hey, like we actually have a chance to win the Stanley Cup this year. So hopefully that can come to fruition for both our sakes. Dean, thanks so much for taking a lot of your precious time to come on the show, and thanks again, and I'll see you sometime soon. I don't know, maybe the draft or whatever, but thanks again for coming on.
All right. See you at the rink.